Hello everybody, this is Hal with Maria. We're talking about the benefits of using tumble forms. There is a scenario where there is this child who is quite young, very young, with spinal muscular atrophy, and
4 or 5 months old.
And there is cross-county responsibility where Maria is working, and there's another county that will be overseeing the child. And the reason why it is with Maria is because of the specialist nature of the problem. Spinal muscular atrophy, the main focus at the moment would have been on the breathing and the desaturating. Maria took the car seat challenge,
The transition hasn't been set up. To spinal muscular atrophy, you are concerned about trunk muscles being very core. It's not able to support right position at this point. And there is a worry that because of that, you could compress on the diaphragm and may affect breathing. But since we are trying to establish position changes and the ability to sit up longer, we need to monitor respiratory levels at a good level while in different positions.
Yeah.
So I have tried to use a tumble form, which coming with tumble form.
These are
modular seating system. It's a 1B. We start with little babies. It's like those bouncers, but doesn't bounce. It's supportive. Set in a reclined position, but you can adjust. It has Velcro. It's a stand, and you can adjust the angle. You can do upright, almost lying down.
Yeah.
Hey, so you start with a lying, and then you build up more as the child toddler and seating. So that's the available seating option for little babies.
Yes. And it's temporary, right?
Temporary.
Yeah.
For assessment purposes. But if the child is better in it, you can prescribe that seating. It's a starting point to establish the ability to tolerate seating, respiratory levels at different positions. So I tried that. There were consultants and nurses everywhere. It dips in and out in live session, and I don't mind that.
Not a car seat challenge, right?
Yes.
It's a positioning challenge just to see what kind of seating would be suitable for the child. But to do that, you wanted to see whether the child can assume the position first without compromising their saturation level. And you've used these modular devices, which was just is quite old, these tumble forms. This has been around since the 80s, I think. Because a lot of companies have put in some adaptive aid ever since. But this has been around, and I believe 70s and 80s. These are tumble forms. These are foam-based. Hard foam that is modular. We can use it for positioning. What was the position of the child then? What was the degree of an upright posture the child was able to do?
So upright would be 90 degrees. 45.
45 would have been the most.
Almost lying down. So 10 of 0 of 10 of 50. 45. I think that's how I started sitting. It's just like when you use a bouncy chair for babies.
Okay.
It's more stable and it doesn't bounce.
Okay. That's what the child can tolerate.
Initially, I progressed to about 60 degrees. Because you can move it. You can adjust the position. We're not doing 90. But it was a starting point, and I started to build up and aim for a more upright
position. Does the child have head control? He doesn't have head control.
So this is why you have to look into what accessories you want in a seating system.
Okay.
We're considering a different seating system. This is just for assessment purposes. Yeah. So what I did, because I can see that the child, although it's not tumble form, what we use is a medium size tumble form. Doesn't have feet support. It's bucketed, supported on the hips. But you can see the trunk controls lean on the side. They put rolled up towels on each side, so that it
positions it,
keep it stable under the armpits and around the neck to open the airway, because the tendency is a head nug and a chin tuck, which can cause the breathing problem.
Yeah.
But they rolled up a towel around the neck and adjust that way. And he was fine. He has an NIV on and he was aging, seeing people around. And he was a more stable throughout the assessment, I have the SATS monitor on, and he was fluctuating from 198.97 back up. Never went down to 97.
That's a very good position then. How long did the child tolerate it?
Half an hour.
What would the next session would have been to progress it to?
He was fine. I left the child. After 20 minutes, he was fine. The nurse was there. Give another 10 minutes. Half an hour maximum for now. If he starts fasting before that, then put him back to bed.
Okay.
But the nurse report back said he tolerated it. It was fine. But because it's half an hour, we put him down to bed. Okay. But he could have stayed longer. It's
been a good rehab. Technically, the objective would be to build it up to a longer time and in a more upright posture. Okay, on a separate question, this child is 5 months old. Are we expecting that this child be more upright all the time?
I won't aim for a full upright because of the condition. It's the nature of the condition with SMA1. It's more awkward rather than be more participatory of activity.
Okay. So build up, make it as much as you can in being upright posture. If the child can tolerate upright, that would be more on the progression of the intervention.
Yeah.
I'm worried that if you do not sustain that intervention, that the child will deteriorate. Again, if you don't maximize this restorative and developmental restoration, the child will not progress and the breathing will be compromised even more. Now, obviously, that's your service. And then there is a situation where you have to transfer this information to another colleague outside the county. Did you have challenge in...
Well, there was a question about it, why I had to use a sample form. He can risk that they, because of the low tone, that it's compressing in the diaphragm, then it can affect respiration. Which is the whole purpose of the assessment. If I see signs that he's struggling to breathe and the saturation level's going down and down, I wouldn't risk it. I would put him back down to bed.
Okay.
So that was the assessment.
So you were saying the tumble forms were being used as a positional transient.
In this case.
Scenario where you've had it. And the colleagues outside the counties were questioning, why were you using the tumble form?
It wasn't a direct question, it wasn't a direct challenge, but it was just more of a, this is what is recommended.
What were they recommending?
In one of the neuromuscular training sessions, it could be detrimental for the child to sit in the tumble form.
Unless you just walk the child into one place straight away, it could be, isn't it? Like equally, any place where you plunk the child in and you sit them up, without even assessing the child's response to it, then it will have the same effect, won't it?
Hence why you need to be keeping the monitor on. You are assessing the responses. You don't just prop the child and leave it. That is the dangerous part. You don't hand that over to parents straight away.
Because
when this position, I was assessing using the chair to see how positioning can affect breathing. Having the monitor as well, check it constantly. Is it going down?
Uh-huh.
No, it's fine. He's responding well. Check on the corner.
Uh-huh.
Of the face, the paleness, changes in the eyes, he's crying, uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So all the signs, you have to keep an eye on breathlessness while you're with the child sitting in that position. I mitigated problems on postural alignment, the spinal alignment. Mm-hmm. That was a question that because the muscles are too poor, it can cause scoliosis and any curvature in the spine.
Long term, isn't it?
And it can cause compression on the breathing system. So I would recommend from that assessment, if we are going to look into a specialist seating system, I would go for accessories like laterals, supportive laterals, having a pelvic pads, good seating, feet support, head support. You have to keep the child in a good postural alignment to avoid problems with breathing.
Okay. Okay, that's good. That's good. Am I sensing that the other colleagues outside the county were challenging that why did you use the tumble form? They should have used this type of seating.
It wasn't a direct challenge. Just why they didn't try the tumble form.
They did not want to try the tumble form.
They didn't because of those reasons. In a way, to explain, this is what I did with the tumble form. And the seating system we are looking at, will be a progression from this seating.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing.
The core learning here is the center of everything is the child. And
of course,
when you were doing it, regardless of the equipment, what you were doing was making sure and trying to establish the appropriate position that the child can tolerate, and the how upright the child is, what would have been the support that was required. And you managed to establish it. What was available to you was the tumble form, but it equally, you would have probably achieved the same result using other positioning
systems. Sitting system.
If you have it.
Why do we have to change position? Why not lying down? There are car seats that can lie down. If we try a normal car seat, it's sat in that position anyway.
And the position would have been?
Seating, the tumble floor.
Okay, okay.
If he can sit in that, good.
Why not?
Why not? If he's not tolerating that, we'll go for the lying down car seat. Okay. That's not an issue.
They recommending something that is more of a lying down position straight away and not be upright?
Because of the condition is
they don't want the child in an upright position. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
In transport.
If the child can tolerate it and developmentally it can be done, why would you deny that opportunity for the child to be at the level where they are? If they're at the level developmentally of 4, 5, 6 months of being semi-upright, that gives the child more normality.
An opportunity to develop the strengths.
Yes.
That way.
Because if you do not challenge the body, and floppy, and this is where developmental restorative approach is coming in, and what you've done is that. Because yes, it's easy to just put them in a lying down position and get the person breathing, but it also does not
over any challenge.
Challenge, nothing in normality.
Imagine lying down all the time. Yeah. What is the ceiling there? Engagement is hard. And normally SMA would have normal cognition.
Yeah. And what did the parents think? About
they were happy when he was sat up.
They were so proud of the child.
Because I'm in denial about the condition. I don't believe the child has this, which is tricky for me.
To say your child shouldn't be upright.
I need to be careful with what I'm recommending as well. They could start doing more, which could be detrimental for him. So we're in this phase. We just do what we get. We're guided by the responses we get from the child, what available equipment we have. And we can progress that into a much better and more supportive posture. They have a different type of seat. In the meantime, this is what I have.
Did you find a difference in therapy approach between yourself and another clinician in a different area?
Yeah. I think the confidence to try something, to do something, it could be scary. When you say SMA, oh my gosh, it's scary.
Everybody gets scared of a lot of condition.
It's touch and go. Mm. It's palliative. Not a lot of children survive the first life.
Yeah.
With SMA. But my point is, we're in an environment
that is controlled.
You have all the monitors. You're not just putting the child in a chair and leaving the child in it. You can monitor.
You have all the backup.
The backup of people. You. So why not try it here while you can? But it could be daunting to do that. If you think about all the theories and things that's taught to you, you can say that you shouldn't be doing this, should be doing. But until you go there and assess the child, you'll never know.
Exactly.
It is going back to our previous talk about going in blind. Not completely blind because you know the condition, you know the child. You just don't know how much this child can tolerate because you haven't tried.
You need to utilize your proper clinical judgment. And I think there's a lot of therapists who always plays it safe. They go by what was written, a guidance that have been set, but that is very crude. And they're not, it stops people from really analyzing and making that clinical judgment. Because if you are to be guided by guidance alone, then that will not make you an expert clinician. You're just following. But sometimes you really do need to analyze the child and your patients, respond to what is required, and weigh everything based on what the child is demonstrating.
Reflection
of the differences, perspectives of clinicians.
Utilizing resources you have.
Yeah.
Be risk assessing constantly. Be good at assessments around.
In this country, the United Kingdom, I find that the term being used all the time is risk assessment. Risk assessment, like we said, because you have assimilated that terminology. But for an occupational therapist, you have to do an activity analysis all the time. An analysis or task analysis. And with that task analysis involves assessment of the person, assessment of the risks that is involved, isn't it? So you're really, as an occupational therapist, you're thoroughly analyzing the situation.
Yeah,
and that involves the risk.
That's why I use the risk.
Yeah,
because
I know.
Because in this situation, we're looking at it in a very medical point of view.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah.
Because it's not the seating that I'm assessing. It's not the actual movement.
It's not the positioning.
It's not the positioning. It's the child's medical responses.
Yeah.
And the risk of that thing going low beyond the normal level. So that's what I meant about risk assessment. Because if you notice, that's going beyond 97, 96, and now that's it, we're done.
Yeah.
You go back to bed. And that's still an activity. You're lying down in bed.
Yeah.
That's low risk than sitting at this point.
Yeah.
You can document it, that make recommendations based on what in that situation.
My worry is, at the moment, the pragmatic aspect of the scenario, right? So you've done it. You've done the analysis. You can see that around 60 degrees, the child would benefit. They can saturate up to 97%. The child can tolerate it.
The NIV.
With V. You've done that. You are confident you can do that. After this child leaves your care, they will be handed to another clinician whose clinical values and judgment and confidence will be different from yours. And what they will do is they will not push the child to that level of standard that you have set, because they will be cautious, get the child into a lying position, which will likely undo most of the things that you have accomplished.
Once they transfer from us, they will have to comply with the handover from me.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's written, if it's clearly documented, this is what the child's able to do now, this is what you can do, I think they will do it. As someone has done the first steps of it.
Yes.
Because I think it's the first step that's daunting.
Yeah.
Because they were even saying, we just ordered the chair. I'll trust the setting up with you.
Yeah.
So I would set it up, try and say, this is how much he can tolerate in this seating. This is the positioning he's required to do every time. And once it's properly handed over, there'll be a carryover.
I hope it does. I really do. If there is a trust and the skill is balanced, like mm-hmm. yours and the receiving therapist, then that would be good. But if skills and confidence are not the same, once they are there, yes, they will opt for that. But the slightest mishap, they will opt to go on conservative, meaning just keep your child in lying position. And that's what I am anticipating, not because what you've done is right or what they've done is wrong, but because there are two different skills. And we cannot guarantee that when we pass on our tasks to somebody else in the community, we're expecting that they should. But really, in this country, every therapist has different skills.
And another good thing is the parent.
Yeah.
He is a parent.
Yeah.
Once you have taught the parents how to do it, they will be insisting.
They will be advocating for their child.
Yeah, they will be. I think that's the difference with the handover.
Yeah.
There will be someone who's already seeing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. The parents will be saying, oh, we're doing this already in there. You can tolerate that. I saw that before. I was trying to do things differently. And the parents like, oh, this is what we're doing already in there. Okay. So I think that will be reassuring.
Yeah. As long as the parents, obviously. They will be confident enough. This is my child. This is how we're managing it. I know my child can do this from a stroke perspective, right? I would see the patient and I will do the skills that I would do. So yes, these are the things we can do. I can do this intervention with the patient. Yeah, all NDT treatment approaches, and the patient is seeing it, that there is progress. But then as soon as I transfer it, even to early supported discharge, sometimes they opt for adaptation straight away rather than doing the restorative side of things. And that is very frustrating because it's just different. I cannot control what the receiving end would do. No matter how hard I say it and I recommend it, it just depends. Even physiotherapists nowadays are relying more on going adaptation straight away rather doing restorative intervention. You see a stroke, most of the time they'd focus on, yeah, let's get you walking with a frame straight away rather than restoring the body, the proper alignment, the proper movement. There'd be some who would try, but it's just different. I'm always worried that the information and skills get diluted over the years. It's humbling. It's an experience that's almost sombering and humbling. But yeah, that's a good conversation. It's a random, this is an OT conversation, but what is it? Relevant information involving OT? Yes. Is it a relevant introspection involving occupational therapy?
Yeah.
Is it a rant involving occupational therapy? Partly, maybe there's a frustration involving occupational therapy.
Let's get it going.
Okay, guys, thank you for listening. This is How, your occupational therapist, and I'm with
Maria.
Bye.